The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks. Tom's engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass, and together we welcome you to this Friday edition of Buckmaster. It is the 26th of January, 2018. By the way, the program re-airs if you're up early tomorrow, Saturday morning. We're on from 7 to 8. This edition will get a second airing. We do a big shout-out to our media friends who prominently display our logo, which is a nice link to the BuckmasterShow.com site, TucsonSentinel.com, thanks, Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, Tucson Media Group, and that group includes the Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert News, other media partners, Southern Arizona News Examiner, and the Three Sonorans blog. Our Friday Focus interview today, Tucson Mayor Jonathan Rothschild is with us. Mayor, how are you?
I'm doing good, Bill.
Thanks for coming in. Joining me in the discussion with the mayor is Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Sarah, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin with what's been positive economic news. In my 30 years in town here, there had been talk. One of the things that we really wanted to get done downtown was a hotel that is connected to the Tucson Convention Center. Yep. Within the past 10 days, an announcement was made. There's going to be a 125-room hotel coming. Then within a few days ago, we're going to have a 20-story office complex. That'll be one of the tallest buildings in downtown. That will be really the first major high-rise in downtown in so many years. Then we get this report that was picked up by Forbes magazine, but the data came from a company called Headlight Data. And among the 53 largest metro areas in the country, Tucson had the poorest economic growth in the period from 2011 to 2016.
Well, let me start with the good news, because statistics can be, a lot of things can be done with them, and I've gone ahead and looked at that report. What I look at is things on the ground. And the opening of the AC Marriott Hotel, which is not next to the convention center but on the streetcar line, has been a complete success. I think it's been sold out almost since its opening and continues to be. Getting the Caliber Hotel next to the convention center thing will be nice. But it's not just the 20-story hotel over on the property across from the TEP building, but there's also a 20-story complex. It's multiple buildings that have been at least
the 20-story office.
Yeah, that's a 20-story office complex. Okay. But then there's also a large complex that is under design with a planned area development agreement at Campbell and Speedway. And that's been there for some time, and that's beginning to move forward. So you have to say to yourself, regardless of what numbers you're looking at, you know, somebody must be wanting to come into this community.
Yeah, would they want to come into this community? Or would they be willing to make this kind of investment if this was such a horrible place economically?
So, Bill, I went back and looked at those numbers, and it really is interesting. First of all, a little surprised that a journalistic institution like Forbes would start taking things from Headlight, because I mean, we see these listicles, we call them, for various reasons.
We were just named the top place for millennials. Hip, one of the hippest places.
But they do go to Bureau of Labor Statistics, which we've had a 6.3% increase over the last 4 or 5 years, and I think they call it the regional, gross regional product, and that includes the whole county. And so here's what those numbers show. Between 2011 and 2017, our gross regional product grew from $34.2 million to $37 million. A very good size increase. Okay, it's about that 6.2% increase. We have now, for the first time, been classified in the metropolitan statistical areas, over 1 million people. So we're at 1,016,000. So if I could get rid of 16,000 people, I could drop down from Division One, back to where Tucson has always been, Division Two.
So now we're in Division One.
So now what you're seeing is we're being compared to Denver, Seattle, Atlanta, Boston, New York City, Chicago, Miami, which is great. Those cities, on average, in that time, 2011, 2017, had a gross regional product, an increase of about 10%. Okay? If you take a look at, divide that per capita by our gross regional product, and you get a much different picture of what Tucson's doing. Okay? And so we're now with playing with the big boys. And the fact of the matter is that's okay. That's a step in the right direction, number one. But I think people need to look at it that way, because some of the way it was reported is, oh, you've had a 3.7% decrease. No, what we've had is we're 3.7% below the average of the top 55 cities in the United States, being the smallest metropolitan area considered. Now, that being said, you know, you've heard me say this before. I think Sarah's heard me say this before. This region needs to step up its economic development game. And that's not just, and that is across the board, at the city level, at the county level, and particularly at the private sector level. At the city, we're currently searching for an economic development director. There should never be a time when we don't have an economic development director of a top class person. So we're in that process. But a really good example is the GEICO example. We were in danger of losing 2,100 jobs because GEICO had outgrown its facility here. The folks from GEICO came to us a couple years ago and said, we want to stay in Tucson, but we need a place. We spent a couple of years looking for the right place for them, looking for the right opportunity. But it was really driven in large part by the private sector, in this case, Don Bourne, who was the agent. And we worked, the city worked with them, the county worked with them, the ACA a little bit. And the sum result is not only did we save the 2,100 jobs, but they're going to add 800 more jobs. Okay? So that's really how economic development works. And we're competing against the world. And we got to hustle, and we have to have people that are willing to hustle. We have to have people that are willing to work their behinds off. And that's how those things happen. You know, another part of this is a lot of our good economic news lately, the expansion of Raytheon, the expansion of Caterpillar, the expansion of Home Goods. We've announced those expansions, but those are expansions that are going to be occurring over the next 3-4 years in terms of bringing the people in, bringing the good paying jobs in. So it's nice to have that pipeline. That'll serve as a little cushion for us. But I don't think you can ever stop pushing and being aggressive when it comes to trying to bring good jobs to our community.
Sarah Garrett-Gasson.
Well, along the lines of being a million-person community and economic development, the list for the Amazon headquarters, too, came out, and we were not on it. Neither was any of the other applicant cities trying to, you know, say, please, Amazon, come here.
No, in Arizona.
Yeah. So what lessons do you take from that? Are there any lessons to take, or were we ever really in the running?
You know, the way that comes down is, in all fairness to everybody, you know, I'm sitting in my office, minding my business, trying to fill potholes, clean up garbage, and all of a sudden these emails, Mayor, what are you doing about getting Amazon here? I don't know. Is Amazon looking around? You know, so I called Joe Snell up at the, you know, Suncor, and I said, Joe, apparently Amazon's out looking. I guess we ought to get in the game. And Joe says, and I think, by the way, very fairly, Jonathan, you know, they're going to be looking at Chicago. They're going to be looking at Atlanta. They're going to be looking at Boston. I said, Joe, I appreciate that, but if we don't try, we'll be criticized as much as trying and not getting it. So we made the effort, and really my message to the folks in Tucson was, look, we were considered not even on the radar screen with Tesla. We made the effort. We had some inside connections there through Mark Kelly, but we got in the final three. The fact that we didn't get it and it went to Reno, which is where it was kind of always destined, And the state of Nevada gave incentives that I think if we deeded the state of Arizona probably wouldn't have matched. And that's going to be much the case in the Amazon case. Doesn't matter. You have to go through the exercise. You have to come together, work together. And I will tell you, going through that exercise subsequent to that as a region, between the city, the county, the Sun Corridor, the ACA, we've worked much more closely together, much more facile and able. So, I don't think we were ready to be the Amazon city. But
you're saying it was a good exercise in bringing people together on economic development.
Those are always good exercises.
Do you know if the Arizona Corporation, not Corporation, Commerce Authority, ACA, in Maricopa County and in Phoenix, was Tucson included in their kind of state pitch?
I don't know. We sent our information to them. They became very quiet. I talk with the director, Sandra Watson, on a fairly regular basis. She is always most accommodating. But it would be nice. And I know that the media tried to make some efforts.
Right.
It would be nice to see those things. Our conversations, and conversations, by the way, I've had with the governor, is, look, a state is not going to be healthy if it has only one metropolitan economically healthy area, which in this case would be the greater Phoenix area. You really need to focus on Tucson, which is your second city. And the governor has said, I get that, and he has done on occasion the Caterpillar thing, the Comcast thing, has made those efforts. And I tell him, you need to do a lot more. But in fairness also to the ACA, we have a closing fund in this state, and I know some people don't like the incentives in giving cash to corporations, but that's the way the game's played. We have a closing fund in this state of $15 million. Texas, Louisiana, Georgia put out $15 million on a project. They have $100 million closing funds. Our state legislature doesn't see that. And as a state, I know there's people on both sides of kind of the ideological aisle that don't appreciate that kind of thing. But bottom line, in the way we look at it, even when we do like a GPLAT, we're not going to give something to somebody unless we can have a certainty that in a relatively short period of time, we're going to see the return on those dollars in tax dollars, income tax dollars, sales tax dollars, property tax dollars. If you can do that, if you can monitor and be sure of it, then it's worth doing. Are these white whales, these Amazons and these Teslas, do they do that? I think that actually still remains to be seen.
All right. We'll take our break right here. Mayor Rothschild will stick around for another segment with us on The Buckmaster Show, Friday edition. We will be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our three new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday, we'll have our Monday Political Face-Off featuring commentators Jim Kelly and Dr. Don Jorgensen. Then we'll talk with Heirs of the Republic founder Jeff Uch. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI. Have our worldwide live listening on my website. That's buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition, our Friday Focus interview today. The mayor of the city of Tucson, Jonathan Rothschild, and with me in studio, our guest reporter and one of our regular contributors to this program. We're delighted to have her, Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial page editor for the Arizona Daily Star and also columnist. Mayor, one of our Facebook friends at my Facebook, Bill Buckmaster, was concerned about staffing levels for the Tucson Police Department, and this friend was contending that perhaps the public isn't getting the true picture on the weekly staffing reports from each of the divisions.
Yeah. Let me tell you that at the mayor and council level, manager level, we are also concerned about staffing levels. We're going to go, when I leave here, I'm going to a four-hour retreat, mayor and council retreat, about our budget, where we're going to look at where we've been, where we are, what our challenges are, and certainly personnel all across the board, I think, is going to come out as the number one priority. But the fact of the matter, and I've seen different numbers, and one of the things you have to keep in mind, you know, there's always a context. I think the union representation election is this year, and every time there's a union election representation, different people start throwing out different numbers. Here's the numbers as I have them, and I got them this morning from our command staff. We currently are authorized at 856 officers. 812 of those positions are filled. We should be probably at a little over 900. And some people tell you we should be at 1,200. I can tell you we should be at about 900. The current vacancies, which I think your Facebook mm-hmm. friend was concerned about, really had to do with divisions and talking about how divisions were filled. We fill and change divisions every day. based on need. And so you can't really go on a spreadsheet and look at divisions, because that's something that these guys, with current day's technology, they move guys around all the time. We do have academies in place. The issue with academies is they take 5 months of total training time, and then it takes another 4 or 5 months to really get up to speed. But right now we have 67 recruits in the training process, but we don't count them as deployable officers yet. Our most recent academy class started this month. We'll be starting another academy in April, and we're going to run 4 classes per year. So we recognize that we need to fill some of these positions. The fact of the matter is that people are not regularly applying for police positions now. We really have to actively recruit to get folks to be police. And then even if you get 67 people into a class, we take this very seriously. When you give somebody a gun and you say you go out and protect the public, those people have to be our top-notch citizens.
But you are not inflating figures to show you have more police officers.
No. There are folks that are deflating figures, but that's fine. And you can read numbers in a lot of ways. I think the key thing to this is that there's a recognition that we need more officers. But remember this too: we have a finite set of dollars we work with. We don't get to turn knobs except for when the voters give us a half cent now and then. And so we have a finite set of numbers. We also have a compression issue. So because our raises have been slow, we've got people who have been working 2 or 3 years making the same as people been working 12 or 13 years. Well, that doesn't help morale or, you know, retention either. So we need to look at that compression problem. To the extent we can help solve that, that's going to mean less money for officers, okay? If we put in more officers, that means less money for the compression issue. It's a finite amount of money. Something else that's important really does have to be recognized. We've got a set of blue-collar workers, parks workers, roads workers, environmental service workers, who have not received even the kind of compensation over the last few years that police and fire have. And I think there's a recognition among council that we need to address these folks too. So starting today at 1:30, we're going to listen to the manager about what may be available.
This is the retreat this afternoon.
The other part of that is our pension, and it's public safety pension, not civil pension. Our public safety pension is one that is controlled by the state, both in terms of investment and in terms of formula, for the most part. We took a $20 million addition this year from the state. If we had those $20 million, that's a lot of police officers. That's a lot of raises.
All right, let's bring Sarah Garrett-Gasson in from the Arizona Daily Star.
In November, the voters turned down Prop 204, which is the Strong Start Tucson, mm-hmm. which would have raised the sales tax to provide high-quality pre-K early education. That failed at the ballot box, but people have been talking about kind of what do we do now. Everyone was talking about we support the idea. It's just the mechanics of how that initiative was written. What are you willing to think about and to do to make early education or education? Because it seems like the state isn't going to help. We need to kind of take care of our own. So what are your thoughts on that? Where do we go from here?
So I think the first focus, Sarah, has to be on 301. And I don't know that everyone down here either was wanting to pay attention or was willfully paying attention. We have a 0.6 sales tax, state tax, that is dedicated to public education. It is expiring in 2020. We were hoping that the state legislature would put it on the ballot for this year. They won't. But they will put it in 2020. They won't have a choice. There is a lot of discussion in Phoenix about what that ought to look like. The business community, who recognizes the problem, I think just like the business community here has recognized the problem, is talking about two proposals. One, moving it to a cent, and adding money. Or two, they're even talking about moving it to a cent and a half in raising money. The governor to date, I believe, has said he wants to stay where he's at, the 0.6, although I've heard some talk that he might entertain the one. If you move that to a high enough number, preschool ought to be included in that. Preschool needs to be part of the public education system. It needs to be part of a system where there's an existing infrastructure in place. And it needs to be run by a system that's already existing. Our best shot at that, and again, you're not going to find very many people who aren't going to say that this would be of value, I think has to be in the bigger picture. And that's where I'm going to put my efforts over the next 2 years, is to get 301 expanded. I can tell you, if 301 loses, I'm not sure what happens to our public education system. Okay. And I think that's really where we need to put the focus. That's, I think, what we're going to see. And, you know, as much as we'd like to drive the conversation, a lot of that conversation does get driven out of the Maricopa County, the GPEC up there, their big boards, their educate, you know, the Helios Foundation. They have a lot of strong education foundations up in Phoenix, and that's where they're looking. And I think we should join those forces and assure that preschool gets included in that conversation, because at this point, a lot of that conversation is just K-12. But you could carve out a piece of that for preschool if you could get the right number. And it may very well make it more appealing to the people of Arizona.
I've only got a couple of minutes left, and I do want to talk about, speaking of kids, more than 7,000 Tucson students now can go on these arts field trips this year, this school year. And I know you launched last year something called Great Start, and now you're trying to expand that.
Well, and this is another example of really working with our partners up north. So last year, however we came up with the idea, we decided that we would go out to our arts and museums and theaters and symphonies here in Tucson and say, hey, can you give tickets to kids in Title I schools, kids who might not otherwise have the opportunity to go to your shows? Gets them the exposure, gets you a market, and quite frankly, when you hear the individual stories, the impact is incredible. We got about, in our community, folks to give 2,100 tickets, and that was great. And some of them have been doing that before, working and doing that before. There's a program in Phoenix called Act One, and they take their Phoenix opportunities, and working with Act One, we'll be able this year to provide tickets to 7,000 students in Tucson. Even more important than this tickets, because they've been down here working too, is they have money for transportation. So the real issue is we're giving tickets to people.
Sure, but what about getting the kids to the facilities?
How do you get there? You
know, so this is going to get the kids to the Tucson Museum of Art or to a different venue to see a play or a musical.
And it can get them there individually with their parents, or it can get them there in a classroom where 30 kids can go, and they have workbooks so they can actually do academic work out of it. And it's a good quality addition to our community.
And I don't know if the Roadrunner hockey, they had a special where a lot of kids came to a hockey game, and it was a morning game.
It was great. I went over to it. You know, I was like, my first question is, how do you get all these kids out of school?
And everybody got excited. Well, the place was packed, and the players enjoyed it, even though it was like 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I showed up towards the end of the second period, and I'm figuring, the kids will be bored. They'll be running around.
They were into it, right?
Oh, they were screaming and yelling. So I saw Dustin Williams, the school district superintendent. Yeah. And I said, Dustin, how'd you pull this off? How do you pull 6,000 kids out of school? Yeah. He had created an academic workbook with math, with anatomy, with history. He goes, every kid had to do this thing. And you know what? The Roadrunners, because let's think about that. If we're going to make hockey into something in this community, and the Roadrunners would be community partners, that's going to help youth hockey.
Yep.
That's going to help U of A hockey. That may get us an additional facility. Mm-hmm. And so now a great effort by the Roadrunners, by the people that privately sponsored, and by the school districts. It wasn't just TUSD. It was Vail and Moran and all the school districts were
terrific.
There.
Terrific.
It was a blast.
All right. Mayor, thank you very much. We'll let you go, and hope you have a good weekend. You're off now to the Tucson City Council Retreat. Hopefully everybody will stay awake, right, after after lunch today.
I think the manager will be keeping us awake.
All right. Have a good one.
All right, thank you.
And Sarah will stick around. Sarah Garrett-Gasson, sixth round. Jim Nintzel will join us. He's already with us on the live line. We'll pick up with Jim in about a few minutes after we hear from our fine sponsors. Be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Bon Voyage Travel's 2018 Travel Showcase is back. With over 30 travel companies to share their knowledge and a room full of travel professionals, you can't go wrong. Planning the perfect vacation takes time and involves quite a bit of research. Bon Voyage Travel is here to simplify the process and ensure you always receive the best value. Join us February 3rd at La Paloma from noon to 4 p.m. There will be presentations, exclusive offers, prizes, and a show floor giving you the opportunity to have a one-on-one consultation with us. Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our three new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. An Indian food lover's paradise awaits at Indian Twist, located at the southwest corner of Swan and Camp Lowell, with a varied and extensive menu including vegetarian options and many dishes prepared in the tandoor oven. Indian Twist offers takeout and buffet lunch daily with dinner served family style. The full bar features Indian beers on tap. Indian Twist, Swan and Camp Lowell, and IndianTwistAZ.com. Welcome back. It is now the roundtable portion of our Friday hour. Sarah Garrett-Gasson sticks around from our interview with the mayor. Sarah is the editorial page editor of the Arizona Daily Star, and she's also a columnist. Jim Nintzel is the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Jim's with us on the live line. Jim, how are you?
Great. Really enjoying the new Calexico record that came out today. Our local rock and roll stars have their 9th studio album, and I'm digging it a lot, Bill.
They've really done some great things, haven't they?
They certainly have.
Are they still based here?
So Joey Burns, the lead singer, lives here, as do a few members of the band. John Convertino, the other really half of the heart of Calexico, is now in El Paso. And they have members that live in Germany, Spain. They're a very international collective.
Jim, in your column, The Skinny, you had some interesting statistics about, yes, a lot of people are pointing to the 2018 midterms as being kind of a turnaround year for the Democrats. But one thing that should be of concern to Democrats for the statewide offices anyway, really, they are lagging behind the candidates, the statewide office candidates, lagging behind Republicans.
They are. On the fundraising races, I know Doug Ducey has millions of dollars, and the Democrats have hundreds of thousands. So Steve Farley David Garcia and Kelly Fryer, who's just entered the race, are way behind where Doug Ducey is. The same as in the Attorney General's race, and same in the Secretary of State, and on down the line. And I think that money isn't everything, but it is the mother's milk of politics. You have to have enough to get a message out, be able to reach voters all across a very big state. And right now, even though there's a lot of enthusiasm for Democrats, the fundraising is not showing a competitive position with Republicans.
And Sarah, that is a big issue, especially for Kelly Fryer. And David Garcia did run before, so he's got, I think, some name recognition. Of course, Senator Farley, but they've really got to get their name out there.
They really do. And it's an uphill battle for anyone from
Tucson
to get that statewide recognition, or at least even just the Maricopa County, Phoenix area recognition, because everything is so dominated by the Maricopa County connection. So I think it's an uphill battle. I think it is something that Democrats have to do much better in, as Jim was saying. And I think it was interesting that a lot of the Steve Farley's donors are those small grassroots
$5-$10 donations.
Yeah, which are great when it comes to, if all of those people come out and vote, that would be marvelous. If you're thinking of it that way, but it's not in compared to the Republicans' war chests, it's really, really, there's a big discrepancy.
Jim, the CD2 race now, there's this nonpartisan Cook political report, which is, I guess, it's pretty highly regarded, right, when it comes to these races, now saying that CD2 is now leaning Democratic.
Yeah, I think almost everybody's got either leaning Democratic or a toss-up at this point. And I think, again, that has to do with that blue wave that we see forming, and we don't know whether it's going to land or not. I mean, that's why we have elections, of course, and a lot can change between now and November, or even now and the 1st of March, for that matter. But we do have a very competitive district in Congressional District 3 that's split roughly one-third Democrat, one-third Republican, one-third independent, and I think what you have there is a lot of people looking at this district and thinking, given where things are with the generic ballot right now, and the fact that it's an open seat with Martha McSally leaving, a Democrat has a pretty good chance of winning that one back.
Well, it's going to be that the Democratic side is your competitive, well, I think it, six candidates. Is that what you've got now on that one for CD2 on the Democratic side?
Five or six, yeah.
Yeah, and so what are you hearing about a challenge to Leah Marquez Peterson, who right now is pretty much the lone Republican in the race? Are you hearing anything?
No, I'm not hearing much ever since my favorite Pima County Supervisor, Allie Miller, said that she would not be running. It's been pretty quiet out there. I've heard that Ted Vogt has decided he's not going to get into it. He was a former state lawmaker who was looking at it. And I haven't heard any other viable candidates coming forward at this point. But, you know, plenty of time left. But at this point, Leah looks like she has the field. Leah Marquez Peterson looks like she has the field pretty much to herself.
Sarah, a state lawmaker, Senator Sylvia Allen, who is a Republican from Snowflake, wants to give Arizona voters a chance to decide if the current $10.50 an hour minimum wage is as high as it should go. She actually is proposing repealing what voters approved last year. The question I have, which seems to be the obvious question, why would the voters who overwhelmingly passed the increasing the minimum wage, why would they want now to cap it?
That is a really good question. I think that this is another case of the Republicans in the legislature not trusting the voters to that they really did vote how they felt, and trying to undermine what the voters have said. They've done this with the initiatives. They've done this with other things. And I don't remember the name of the person, the state representative, who wants to have voters only be able to choose candidates that the state legislature has approved for U.S. Senate.
State legislature sanctioned.
Yeah, basically, we like these are your two Republicans, these are your two Democrats, and you get to pick. I think that's just another example of Republicans in the legislature, anyway, not trusting the will of their constituents.
Jim, you kind of wonder if maybe some of the chamber people may have gotten to Senator Allen and suggested this.
No, I don't even think that would be necessary given her ideological leanings. I think she just feels as though, you know, if she had her druthers, there probably would be no minimum wage whatsoever. So I think it's just kind of I think a lot of these people get caught up in their own echo chambers and don't really recognize the mood of the people out there, and figure that, you know, if they give the voters another bite of that apple, all of a sudden they're going to change their minds. But I, as you pointed out, that passed overwhelmingly, and I really don't see a big reversal there, although it would certainly cost proponents a little bit of money to run another campaign, which might be part of the reason that for that and the legislation that says all voter initiatives should go back to the ballot every 10 years, because I think folks are it costs a lot of money to run a statewide campaign. So I think it's just to basically create a financial penalty for people who put things on the ballot that lawmakers don't like.
Well, the getting back to kind of the governor's race, the governor certainly is moving forward to try to take away at least the marquee issue for David Garcia, ASU education professor who's running, and Steve Farley. That's certainly Senator Farley. Education is the marquee issue for those two. And we interviewed Kelly Fryer a week ago here on the program, and that's one of her three big issues, too. So it's pretty obvious, isn't it, that the governor that this he's moving to take away some of that momentum that they are creating by focusing on education?
Well, I think that you're absolutely right. I think there's the group that isn't that separate from the governor, although they're his supporters, that's has that ad campaign I saw recently.
That Arizona education is okay.
Yeah, we're not that bad. I mean, we're not great, but we're not that bad. And then, of course, you have data from the Quality Counts program coming out and saying that Arizona is last in per pupil spending or near the very bottom yet again. So I don't know how persuasive people are going to how persuaded people will be that, you know, it's not that bad, and is that something to get excited about and something that good enough. I don't think parents are going to go for that.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, you know, I think it's fascinating that the folks out there doing that education advertising and saying it's purely coincidental and has nothing to do with the governor's race this year. Very amusing spin on the entire thing. That said, you know, they're out touting how much money's been put into education, but that's only because so much money has been taken out of education previous to the restoration of some of this funding, and we're not even back to where we were 10 years ago on education funding. So we've got a long way to go in this state. I think, you know, education comes up again and again at the top of voters' minds in terms of what they're worried about in the state, and yet they keep electing people who do not put a lot of emphasis on education once they're in office. So there's a disconnect going on there between what voters say is important to them and who they actually vote for in the state.
All right, Jim, we're going to let you go. Jim Nintzel, we'll look for your work at the Tucson Weekly. Thank you, Jim.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right, and Sarah, this poll that I saw that you got at the Arizona Daily Star, there's information in the paper today if people want to check it out in the first section of the paper. The Star is doing some polling. So
yeah, it's kind of – there's been various topics.
I just wanted to call people's attention to it if they see that in the Star. So there is an outreach going on.
Yes. Yeah, trying to just kind of get a pulse of what's going on in the community.
There you
Thank
go.
You for mentioning that.
Oh, okay. We'll look for your work, too, in the Sunday. Do you have anything coming up that you want to tell us about?
Luis Carrasco, who is our editorial writer who handles the letters to the editor, has a great column kind of behind the scenes of letters to the editor, and you'll find that in the Sunday edition.
Keep those letters coming.
Yes, please.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks.
All right, we'll have Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after this. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for six new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. All righty, Weekend Watch with Inside Tucson Business and Tucson Weekly. Food and beverage columnist Matt Russell is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Just 3 hours from Tucson makes a great weekend getaway. Time for a road trip? Visit southwestnewmexico.org. That's the starting place for the complete listing of the great places to stay and dozens of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, don't tell me, another new restaurant opening.
Yes, Weekend Watch, your destination for information on new restaurants. This week's news is a rejoice for ramen fans, Bill.
Uh-huh.
It's Ragin' Ramen. It's in the old Sushi Saga space on Speedway near Country Club. Now, there are 10 varieties of ramen on this menu, including some vegetarian options, along, of course, with a host of other Asian dishes. Now, the proprietor, who also owns Ginza Sushi up there in the foothills, he first learned about the craft and traditions of ramen growing up in Tokyo. So expect this to be a bowl full of authenticity. I say warm your soul at Ragin' Ramen this weekend.
I know a lot of people just love the ramen products, so that ought to be interesting. What's going on with Brew Bowl?
Yeah, you know, the Super Bowl is still a week away, but there's plenty of bowl-inspired events this weekend, like the Brew Bowl. Tomorrow from 11:30 to 3:30 at Bedrocks Bowling on West Ina Road. This event is going to feature select beers from nearly 20 regional craft brewers, a sampling of food from local restaurants, and, of course, as much bowling as you can handle. Tickets are only $25, and a portion of the proceeds, Bill, will benefit Casa Maria Soup Kitchen. So Brew Bowl is a fun way to enjoy some bowling, some bites, and some beers under one roof. Put it on your calendar for this weekend.
How about the guacamole lovers?
Yeah, the bowl theme continues later on Saturday for the annual Are You Ready? Guacamole Bowl. A celebration of the role that this iconic avocado dip plays in our Southwest culture. It'll all be whipped up at St. Philip's Plaza from 2 to 6 p.m. tomorrow. 12 local chefs are going to be serving their very best bowls of guac, and you can help choose the winner by tasting them all and casting your vote. Tickets are only $12, which includes the tastings, a big bag of chips, a raffle ticket, a sample of ice-cold beer. Go to azguacamole.com to get your tickets now. Bill, I love a little heat in my guacamole. What about you?
Oh, I'm kind of going the mild way. I like it mild and very natural. There you go.
Soft, creamy, approachable, and mild.
Thank you so much. Nice. Have a great weekend, Matt Russell.
Cheers, Bill.
Thanks a lot. All right, the Bill Buckmaster program is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Want to do some thank yous here. We have so many people who are just terrific in supporting our program. Of course, all of our partners, you can find out all about them at buckmastershow.com. And one of our partners who created the original theme music is a guy by the name of Chris Stefan. Chris Stefan is a German composer. Original theme music, we thank him so much for that. And he has an album out now. You can find out about it by going to buckmastershow.com. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt. Rose has been with me since we began the radio project, now in our eighth year. She is my assistant. Our thanks to the team here at KVOI, our operations manager, Ray Allen. Ray, also my producer and engineer Monday through Thursday. Tom Fairbanks, who has a big smile on his face right now on the other side of the glass, producing and engineering for us here on Friday. The funny man and probably the best, I know, not probably, the best production manager and production guy I've ever worked with, Jerry Cross. Alicia, Elsa, Rhonda, the front office staff, Mr. and Mrs. Martin, owners of the station, all of us wishing you a safe and pleasant weekend. Have a good one.